Welcome to the sidelines. We are back once again. Matt Dolifier with Ty Anderson, another Bruins post-game show. And unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be one of the last times we do this during the season because the Bruins lost again to Tampa Bay Lightning 3-1. They're down in the series 3-1. Doesn't feel good for their chances to even win another damn game in this series. They've just looked overmatched, and this game, I don't know if I would say they were just like outclassed like they were in game three, but I think the theme of the day today was just poor decision making and unlucky breaks, that the breaks went Tampa's way, but bad turnovers, bad penalties, and I think that just doomed them in the end. If you wanted to point to one big difference, I guess you could say goaltending, because Andrei Vasilevskiy had a big game, and Yaroslav Halak gave up the one bad goal, but I mean, the other ones, you got to blame the decision-making going on in front of them. So, Ty, what's your big takeaway from today's game?
I mean, it's the same. It's the same as it's always been, really, since the second period of game one. And again, if there's a bad break, it's going to end up in your net. If there's a bad penalty, it's going to be taken by the Bruins. And if there's a bad goal, it's going to be surrendered by Yaroslav Halak. Those three things have been the constant these last three games now in this series. I mean, it's been, even when they score, even the Bruins score, I'm expecting the bad turnover or the breakdown or the bad goal to come. And sure enough, it comes here with they're down 1-0. That Halak goal can't happen. It can't happen. If you're telling me that Yaroslav Halak is a serviceable backup who can do the job, that goal can't happen. And it's happened so many times now. He's stopping so many shots from in tight, but letting up these slap shots or wrist shots from the blue line with almost no deflection or screen. He's just missing them. It's happening so much, and it's going to be their undoing, honestly.
Yeah, goaltending is just a big question for the team moving forward, because I mean, Tuukka Rask is still under contract for one more year, I believe, but I don't know if Don Sweeney and Cam Neely can look at him and, from a hockey standpoint, say we can really rely on him to be that guy we need to literally be here for us come playoff time. So I mean, I don't know what they're going to do there, because they obviously can't just roll back out there with Halak. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's the sort of the thing. It's like, well, they can't rely on Tuukka to be there, but they really can't rely on Halak and Vladar to be there either, given what we've seen right now. Is that, you know, listen, Halak is what he is. He's a 1B. But this time of year, typically April, May, and June, he needs to be on the bench. And he's an injury fill-in. He's not a full-time starter. And I think we're seeing, you know, with him, we've talked about this before, you know, is that he has high highs and low lows. Right now, you're seeing a low low. This is a 830 save percentage over the last two games. You're not going to win.
Gross.
You're not going to win with that. But first of all, you're not going to win when that's happening while you're generating, you know, one chance every few minutes, you know, at the other end. It's not – there's no sustained pressure. Unless
they had some chances, though. They had chances. They got – the Vasilevskiy made some big saves, I thought.
Yeah, the majority –
could have been a different game, especially early in the second period. If they scored there, if they could finish there, I think it would have been – could have been a different game. Vasilevskiy closed the door, and then Halak did not.
Yeah, but I just think that the majority of what you're getting has been on the power play. I thought today the majority of it was on the power play. It's just 5-on-5. There's very little creation right now happening with this team. And in my opinion, I just don't see it enough to say that this is going to negate the goaltending advantage that the Lightning have. You know, that's the biggest thing to me, is that, you know, if you're going to have this kind of goaltending from Yaroslav Halak, you need to create more at the other end. And I don't think they're doing enough of that on a consistent enough basis, or a high danger enough basis, if you will, but to say that this can negate such a gigantic gap, you know, of goaltending differences here between Vasilevskiy and Halak.
No, you said high danger. I noted this after the first period. The Bruins outshot them 9-6, but Tampa had the edge in high danger chances 3-0.
Yeah,
and they got that first goal off an extremely high danger chance with, you know, four redwood trees just standing around looking at you while Braden Point dekes out Tori Krug, and that's all she wrote for that one. And that started with a bad turnover in the neutral zone. Chris Wagner trying to lofted all the way across the ice and just turns it right over to the Lightning's arguably, well, their best center right now, mm-hmm. arguably their best forward, most skilled guy. The guy's still skating circles around you and making more plays than anyone on the top line, I think. I mean, at least in the last couple of games, you haven't seen as much from Brad Marchand, but I think David Pastrnak looks slow, at least slower than he usually looks, and Bergeron's not getting it done offensively. And it's just the same story again. I wrote this on the website, 98bythesportshub.com, after that nightmare of a game in game three. I feel like the scientist in a disaster. I'm looking at these guys. I'm going over the sheets. I'm going over the stats. I'm saying, guys, there's going to be a 10.1 magnitude earthquake right here. Here's the fault. It's going to happen. And they're like, no. We're not going to – who's going to listen to this nerd? And it's year after year, the lack of size is killing me. And like people hear me say the word size, and they're like, "Oh no, not that word!" Like they think I want a bunch of Nick Ritchies. No, I'm talking about just literally being big. There are, it's like I feel like you could say like, "Oh no, those guys are hard to find. Big forwards with skill don't grow on trees." But it seems like every other team in the league is stacked with them. And the Bruins have a bunch of Don Sweeneys out there. What the hell? What? How many times are we going to have to watch this without realizing that they have to get bigger on both up front and on the back end, or else they're going to keep getting bullied by these big defensemen, and they're going to keep rolling out the big guys they do have either can't hit, or they're too slow, or they take bad penalties. They don't use – I don't know what it is with Don Sweeney. He can't identify a big forward that works for him, whether Nick Ritchie, Matt Beleski, Brett Ritchie, Jimmy Hayes. Like what is going on there? David Backus, at least you had a pedigree of a guy who could do the things that they wanted to do and do things that could help you in the playoffs. But he was past that point of doing it at a high level when they got for the most part, when they try to get a big forward, they've completely missed. And the guys they are rolling out there, just they get bullied. I'm sick of watching it, honestly.
I think that's, when I say I don't really care for the size or, whatever, it's not because I don't think that it's valuable. It's that I don't think this pro scouting department has been able to find the right guy. I've given up hope on them finding that guy. So anytime they say
– I think I'm at that point too now.
You have to get bigger. You have to get stronger. My first response is, okay, where? Because this team is not going to find the right guy because they've proven that they can't find that guy. It's just they need to draft and develop the next Lucic. They can't. They're not going to find him in a trade market or on free agency. It's going to blow up in their face. So, I don't know.
Couldn't they at least get more Charlie Coyles in the line? Can we at least get a guy with some size who can possess the puck a little bit? Like it just.
I think they thought they were going to get that with Ritchie, based on what he did in Anaheim, his production. He was one of these guys who the analytics as well as the eye test told you that he could do some damage. The problem is just that I don't think that there's a fit for him here. I don't think he works well with Krejci, and I don't think he works well with Coyle. So where does he go? That's sort of the problem. Yeah. I think that in Anaheim, the roster is more built for him.
His
I don't
fit
think
is a fourth line, and he's not going to crack the fourth line here. That's
no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, he could next year if Nordstrom walks as a free agent, but you don't really want that. And so I do think that they thought they were going to get something different with Ritchie. They're getting all the bad of Ritchie. They're getting all the bad penalties and the sort of out of shape, those narratives. They're not getting the guy who was a pretty productive goal scorer with his ice time out in Anaheim. It just hasn't happened. And I do think it comes back down to the roster fit and the fact that he hasn't gelled with Krejci and he hasn't gelled with Coyle. So, okay, well, where is he going to produce then? Because again, you're not putting him on the first or fourth line. So where does he fit?
Maybe Zach Sinishin could be a bit of a solution to that, but I don't know. He's not going to be top six, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he fits on the third. Maybe you fit him on the third line, but I don't know. That's a question for the offseason / next year, right? But, I mean, it's the same old problems. It's going to be 3 years in a row that they bow out of the playoffs because they get ground down by a team that's just bigger than them. And the big guys they do have just play stupid or they play below their size. I saw that Nick Ritchie and Bruce Cassidy basically defended that hit that he put on Yanni Gord. I thought it was a dumb penalty because Gord had long gotten rid of the puck. It was way out of the zone, maybe almost 90 feet away. And then Ritchie just lumbers on in and and rams him into the boards, and he looked about 4 or 5 feet away, maybe even farther than that. And I just thought it was a dumb penalty to take. I don't know how much you could blame that third goal on, you know, the fact that the Tampa was on the power play because it was an unlucky bounce. But I don't know. I think it just sort of sums up Nick Ritchie in the Bruins uniform. They got him for a series like this, and he's done more harm than good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the penalty in game three, the slash, which gets Tampa Bay's power play rolling. The five-minute major, I think, just derailed any momentum they would have had.
And I thought the roughing penalty was dumb, too. He didn't have to drop the gloves. I like that he responded. I like you get in Cedric Paquette's face because that guy's an a-hole.
Yeah.
But, A, I didn't think the Paquette – that was like a 4 out of 10 on the Cedric Paquette skill that hit on Carson Coleman. But he could have got in his face and scrum it up a little bit, but he dropped the gloves. It just didn't need to do it. And then when he fought Goodrow, that pretty much summed it up. Tampa got a big guy who's actually been, like, somewhat effective.
Yeah.
The Bruins got Nick Ritchie. So.
Yeah, you know, it's – for me, the problem with what Ritchie did is it's just – it's because of his reputation. You know what I mean? So, like, if he throws that hit on Yanni Gord, they're going to catch him because he took that slashing penalty in game three, and he took a roughing penalty tonight. So they're watching him. They're going to notice him. Now, where I agree with Cassidy here in the sense is that nobody called a penalty on that play. It's a dumb hit. It's a dumb, dirty hit. There's not a penalty on that play.
Right. They reviewed it and then called it a major, right?
And it somehow became a 5-minute major. Now, that I understand. I understand why they'd be mad about that. Doesn't excuse the hit, though. Doesn't make the hit okay. Doesn't, you know, whatever. It was late, unnecessary, whatever. He's trying to send a message. Bad message to send. But I think that what the Bruins are getting pissed about here, and this is the sense I got from listening to Cassidy and Ritchie, is that they feel as if their standard is different than the Lightning standard. That, well, okay, well, Paquette can hit Coleman. If they're not the exact same, they're a little bit close. Both guys have rap sheets. You know, Paquette's been suspended before. So why is he getting the benefit of the doubt on that play and Ritchie isn't? You know, so I understand where they're coming from that angle. It doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean it's right. But yes, Ritchie's undisciplined play could honestly be this team's undoing, which is just the absolute worst way you could have drawn this up. It's similar to, you know, Drew Stafford, I think, was the guy who took a too many men penalty that led to a winner for Ottawa in 2017. And I think that it was, what was it? They had another one. They had another deadline edition who kind of just, Gianta losing Dan Girardi in front of the net in overtime to cost the Bruins game four. Or maybe that was game three. I think it was game four. You know, so it's like, it could this be another deadline bust that undoes your entire season, which really sucked for the Bruins, especially given this guy's value and what we all thought he would do in this kind of series.
Yeah. Kasha, again, it's. Not only do they have big guys who don't play with their size enough, they have guys who can skate really well but can't score. And I know DeBrusk finally scored, but I mean, that was on like a screen. And Kasha is still pointless. And like it's so frustrating because I like he like passes the eye test the way he plays. And is he going to be a free agent? I don't know. I wouldn't mind if they kept him around, but it's just again.
Yeah, he's around.
I'm sick of the speed and skill guys that aren't using their skill, in addition to the big guys that aren't using their size. This is just a bad mix.
So here's my question for you. I brought it up after game three, and I think it's still relevant today. Would you rather have Danton Heinen and David Backes, or Andre Kasha and Nick Ritchie? Given what you've seen now, nine playoff games with this lineup and with their impact.
I think I'd rather have Backes than Ritchie.
Yeah. No, that's not the deal. You have to take both. You have to take Heinen and Backes.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I think I'd still take Kasha over Heinen, but I'd take Backes over Ritchie. So that's a tough call there.
Because if you go back and look, right, so the trade was 1-for-1.
Keep Backes and Heinen. How about that? Because I think Backes could have given them what they needed out of Ritchie and
they're not that
job at it.
The speed is not that different with those guys.
No.
They're both very slow.
No, they're both plotted.
And what I would say too here is that you go back to the first nine games of the 2019 playoff run. Heinen had a goal and three assists. He had a greater impact than what you're getting out of I think both of these guys, you know, and especially when you look at Heinen's connection with Charlie Coyle on the third line with Johansson there, that was huge for this team, and they don't have that right now. And I would argue that Richie has put them, the ill-fitting Nick Richie with Coyle has put them in a worse spot than they were a year ago, because you're still just as top-heavy as you were back in 2018 and 2019 when you said, okay, this isn't enough, we need more depth. Richie almost negates what Coyle does, because they're never on the same page creating chances consistently like it did with Johansson and with Heinen and even with Anders Bjork earlier this year with Coyle before he kind of fell out of favor.
Yeah, you said top heavy and the first line shutout today. And I mean, there's going to be a lot of long-term discussions about the Bruins after this series ends. I, we both agree the series is over. I don't know if the Bruins can even win another game at this point. But the top line, I think one of the discussions that's going to continue on is, should they break up that line? Should they move Pastrnak down?
They should. I mean, they absolutely should.
Should they put Pastrnak with Krejci and then consider either maybe putting – I don't know. I don't want to put Coyle up there on the right wing permanently, because I think he's good as – he's perfect as a third-line center.
Yeah, he needs the puck. He needs to be center.
Yeah. So that's where I think you could get a bigger winger to create more space for – Bergeron and Marchand. What do you think?
So they've really never tried that. They tried it once, I think, with Jimmy Hayes, and it didn't work. But is that a Hayes thing, or is that a, you know, that combination doesn't really fit with them? They put Coyle there before, and it's looked pretty good. But I think
I wouldn't mind trying Kasha there. Personally.
Yeah, I was gonna say Kasha would be an interesting option there, because again, he's an analytics darling. He shoots the puck. He plays a pretty good defensive game. He can get away with it. The other option too, is you wrote about this earlier, is Stamica. Maybe that's where you get his NHL feet wet, is you put him there and you say, all right, here you go. You're going to, you know, this is what they did with Sagan. They did with Pastrnak. They did with Bjork when he was first starting before he got injured. I mean, this might be the way to get Stamica involved in the NHL game next year, and taking away some of the responsibilities of playing center at this level, you know, learn the game as a winger and then move to your natural position after that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that. I was thinking more like just in the here and now, trying him on the first line, because I still think they could use a bigger guy to you know, like go toe-to-toe with a big defenseman down low and get in on the forecheck, win a loose puck, and then get it to Marchand, and then they work their game from there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I haven't looked – I haven't gone through the free agents or any potential trade candidates at all, so – I don't know what their options are going to be there, but I mean, should we? Is it even worth talking about how can they come back and win the series? Because I really don't think they can.
Well, do you know what their record is historically when down 3-1?
What, like 2-85 or something like that?
0-23. They've never done it.
Never done it, huh?
They have forced a game 6 once.
They've lost a series that when they're up 3-1.
Yeah, I have many a time. like a
That's their hobby.
Yeah.
It's a staple.
When game 5 against Ottawa in 2017, they won. Sean Corrali forced the game 6. They lost game 6. But
that was the birth of big goals only right there.
Yeah, I can't think of a time where they've even forced a game 7 after being down 3-1 in recent memory. I can't think. I mean, maybe there's one I'm missing right now, but I can't, like, off the top of my head, I can't think of any scenarios which they've been down 3-1 and rallied back to just force a game 7. Obviously, never won it, but I typically, these teams, when they go down 3-1, these Bruins teams, they go out with a whimper, which would be a bummer, because I do think that there is a lot of question marks heading into this offseason and where this team is going. I think they're real. I think they're real questions.
Big crossroads. For the team.
Chara hasn't looked good.
No, I was going to bring up Chara. I think it's time to make him a third pairing penalty kill specialist kind of guy if he's going to keep playing.
Yeah, and
I don't think he should be your top pairing guy anymore.
And
consider Grizzlick up there. Krug, exactly. if you re-sign Krug, put him up there with McAvoy. I just said Grizzlick, right? Yeah. I don't know if Makanainen's going to be ready. But, like, I think
Boral, is he going to be finally an NHL player?
I mean, Jesus. You gotta find a new left shot defenseman for the top pairing, I think, because I think Chara again looked at, he was just a step behind everybody today. He was getting people skating around him, and he's then, you know, they pointed it out on the broadcast. I don't know if you heard that, but like, has Chara been out there? Because when they were losing, it's like they don't want to put Chara out there when they have to, when they're down. They only want to put him out there when they're protecting a lead. So it's like, he's like as much of a defensive specialist as it gets at this point.
Yeah.
And like, you can't, he's just, I don't know, he can't keep up at this point.
No, and I do think that the Grizzlick-McAvoy pairing could be a top pairing. I think if McAvoy takes flight and is what we've seen in this postseason, if he can be that full time, then you can get away with that. Yeah, and you can make Chara, you know, a third pairing, 16 minutes a night, mainly on the PK. I mean, that's not bad if you can do it. It's just, can he do that? Can he swallow his pride and say, yeah, I'll be that guy? You know, that might be the problem. So.
Yeah, he can still shut down bottom six forwards, but like, I just don't think I think the time of him being a top pairing, top minute guy is over.
And this is a bad matchup for
him. I hate saying because I love the guy, but you know, I just think that's the reality. The guy's 90 years old. It's like,
this is a bad matchup for him. This Tampa team, especially Braden Point, and you know, he's. I thought he was fine. You know, I mean, given game one and game two. The fact that they were just putting him in the D zone, like exclusively, he was almost never starting in the offensive zone. I thought he handled himself pretty well, but you know, now by game five, you're kind of seeing a little bit of the wear and tear after 4 months off. Maybe the 4 months off killed him, but it's not going to get any easier from here. You know, next year he's going to be 44 right. years old when the playoffs start. So, you know, is it time? I don't know if it's time, but I think it is time for him to not play 25 minutes a night. You know what I mean? Like, it's time for him to kind of settle into that role.
Those days are over. Those days are over. The problem is I don't know if Grizzlick is good enough to do that, because Grizzlick is – I like him. He's good. He's just – I'm just sick of the 5'9" defenseman. I just think they need more – guys who are as big as Carlo and Chara, or if not like a little bit – you know, 6'2", 6'3", and can throw their weight around and can smother of smaller forwards. They just don't have enough of that, and the Lightning have plenty of that. And we always talk about it's a bad matchup. Don't they have to basically build the team to beat Tampa? Like, it's sort of like in the NFL, like in the AFC or the AFC East, you have to build your team to beat the Patriots, at least when Tom Brady was here. They had to build their team in a way that could beat the Patriots because he knew he had to get past them. Mm-hmm. Bruins – they're going to have to get by Tampa if they want to win a cup with this core, which the window is closing rapidly, it seems. And just think they have to – I think that's time to make big, drastic moves to build your team better, to match up better against Tampa.
Yeah, it's a little bit of sort of – I don't know. It's confirmation that last year probably doesn't happen if Tampa doesn't choke in the first round. You know, that you're still a step behind these teams and over the course of a 7-game series. And you know, the one thing I do want to make note of here when it comes to the future is that Tampa might have to blow it up this offseason. But again, the thing with that, though, is that they've always done a great job of finding veterans who want to play for them for cheap money. Or they've drafted supremely well over the last 5, 6, 7 years. So they've
had a much better trade deadline.
Yeah, they've had guys to step in, slide in, and without problems. So, you know, I just think the biggest problem right now for this Bruins team is just that it just feels like, to your point, what you wrote and what we've been saying, it's the same problems again. And how can you fix this with a flat cap, with a lot of your money going to be tied up in keeping some of these guys? And a goaltending situation that is a little bit confusing right now because we don't know what's going to happen with Tuukka. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, is he back next year? Do they feel like they can rely on him, or are they going to move on from him? I don't know. There's so many unanswered questions right now. It's almost too hard to look into the future.
Yeah, we don't have to go. We don't have to look at the future right now. We have plenty of podcasts for that. And it seems like we're going to be talking about that sometime next week at this point.
You know what I want to do? You know what I do want to make mention of, though, when it comes to these last two losses? The loss of Sean Corrali is glaring. Oh my God.
He's your second biggest forward.
I mean, it is unbelievable. Like, even on the PK, just little things that fourth line was benched the third period. They didn't play. That fourth line was benched, and that would not happen if Sean Corrali was centering that line and not Per Lindholm. Wouldn't happen. Because he's a motor. He gets you into plays. He makes big plays happen. Not having him has been a massive loss that I feel like a lot of people are kind of not really recognizing because of everything else that is happening. The unmitigated disaster that these last two games have been for this team.
Yeah, it's he plays he's better than like a fourth line center, but having him as your fourth line center is a huge value, I think.
Yeah,
he played well when they had to move him up to the third line, and he's one of their only forwards who's over 6'2", you know. So it's like, I know I'm such a sizist, but I think that just speaks to your argument there. He's physical and he uses his size to his advantage, and they need more guys like that, not less. So,
well, there's one guy who's a free agent. He's completely cooked, in my opinion. But if you want him for cheap, you could try it as Wayne Simmonds. I think he's completely cooked. I don't think there's anything left in the tank. But maybe that's a name that would get you all hot and bothered as someone who likes big skating.
I would be a realist and say it's probably 5-6 years too late on Wayne Simmonds.
So, that it is.
You said Tampa might have to blow it up. What's blow it up? Who are they going to have to lose?
Well, next year, I believe, is the year where Vasilevskiy's contract kicks up to, I believe, almost $10 million a season. So right now they have, this is according to Cap Friendly, next year they have $5.3 million in available cap space, and they have to sign Anthony Cirelli, Mitchell Stevens, Sergachev, Chernak, and they have some pending UFAs, Shattenkirk, Bogosian, Luke Shen, Pat Maroon, all guys that are free agents. But they're going to have to make some trades here to fit all these guys under the cap. I would imagine. I don't see how you get Cirelli, Sergachev, and Chernak signed for 5.3. You just can't do it. So
no.
I think if I were a betting man, I would say that you're going to have to probably look at trading either Alex Killorn, Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson. Those are three names that would make the most sense to me, given their roster construction, given those guys' age, and sort of, I guess, the most bang for your buck, so to speak. So I imagine one of those guys will be traded, but does it really matter when you go out and you acquire Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow for what they're making? You know, it's like you can trade one of those guys, you're going to be fine. So the end is not near for them like I think it is for the Maple Leafs when you look at their cap situation, but they are going to have to blow it up. So to some degree, whether or not they find replacements, you know, remains to be seen. But they're going to go through some changes as well.
All right. Well, maybe they don't have to gear the long-term plan toward beating Tampa, but I think it still just speaks to Tampa has a winning formula for the playoffs as far as the roster makeup, but I really don't think the Bruins do. Mm-hmm. And I know that's it's easy to say after they lost that game 7, but I think that last year against the Blues, but I think, I don't know, I think that summed up the whole series. I think they were further away than the fact that they made it to game 7 of the finals really indicated. And like you said, Tampa doesn't choke. Did the Bruins even get past the second round of the playoffs? Yeah.
And this is a reminder too that I think that you know, if we didn't have this whole nightmare pandemic, this would have been your second round. This would have been the second round. Boston and Tampa Bay would have been your second round matchup. I don't really think that anything about that would really change. It's a complete unknown, obviously, but I don't think that anything would change because they still wouldn't have Stamkos, or maybe they would. But that's a break that benefits you right now. The fact that he's not playing benefits you. You haven't done anything with it.
They're doing this without Stamkos and Ryan McDonagh.
Yeah. So
they put Braden Coburn and Luke Shen in there, and it's the same result. And to me, that just speaks to a physical disadvantage.
Exactly. That speaks to me that pandemic or not, doesn't matter if you're in a bubble or not, you're not beating this team. You can't beat them. Whatever. They're your boogeyman right now. You got to get through them at some point, though. And I don't know how you do it. Because this defense, and I noticed this against Columbus as well, is that this defense, they don't allow a ton of high-end chances because they're all so big. 6'6", 6'3", 6'2", 6'4". It's just so that goes back to what you're saying. It's a roster construct thing, and I don't think the Bruins are built to blow it all up and dramatically change their roster or in one offseason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's going to be a lot of questions, but we can cover that at a later date. I think we can leave it at that because we'll be back on Monday night. Hopefully it's about a win and not the end of the Bruins season. Do you have any closing thoughts, Tyler Lee Anderson?
I think it's over. I think it's over. Man. They haven't had a good period since game one. And this is now three straight games of them looking like hot garbage and unable to really match what Pastrnak has to be hurt more than how he looked when he first came back. I don't know what the hell is going on. I don't see how they force a game six. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. I'd love to be wrong, but I nothing is inspiring any sort of confidence in me right now. Nothing at all.
Backs against the wall, and this is going to be technically a home game for Tampa, so they're going to have the line change advantage. And, mm-hmm. I don't know how much that will really have to do with it, but you know the Bruins. Facing elimination, I think you will get their best effort that we've seen in a few games, best effort of the series, maybe.
But I think on game four.
Yeah, I did. But now that the season is truly almost over, I think you'll see a better effort. But I think the matchup advantage that Tampa has and the huge advantage they have in goaltending just is what it is, and I think that's what's going to win out, whether it's Monday or the later game.
No, we just sound like the guys who predict it. It's like that scene in Ghostbusters 2 when Bill Murray is like, that's pretty short for the end of the world, huh? And the guy's like, he's like, actually, I think that it's going to happen. It's like, we keep changing when the world is going to end. We're like, no, I think now is when they wake up. It's like, I don't know. They haven't woken up yet. I can't say they're going to wake up. They haven't done it yet. I can't do it anymore. I refuse.
No, I think they wake up, but I just don't think they're good enough. That's, you know, they can wake up. It's just they're just still just not good enough. The Tampa's just a better team, and I would have said it going into the series, and even with Tuukka Rask, and there's going to be people blaming Tuukka, but
he's trending right now on Twitter, in case you're wondering. So that's where everyone everyone's talking about. Yeah,
absolute psychos. With Tuukka Rask in net, the Tampa's still better. I'm sorry. So,
today
you can't put on Halak. He gave up the one bad goal. And I guess maybe that you could say that swung momentum when the Bruins had a chance to tie the game at that point. But
it's a terrible goal. It's and there's just too many of them. I mean, I want handwritten apologies from everyone who told me that Halak could lead this team to the Stanley Cup just as well as Tuukka. I want apologies. I'm not going to get them, but I want them.
Yeah, Tuca's in net, gives up a goal, his fault. Tuukka leaves, still his fault. Can't win.
Totally normal thing to do, right?
Can't win. Yeah, totally normal behavior. All right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Sports Hub Sidelines podcast. Bonus edition, Bruins post game. Hopefully more than just one of these to go, but we'll be back Monday night after game five. And if you're listening, if you got this far, thank you. Please rate and review. Shout out to our listeners who did rate and review. Shout out to people who are looking forward to us picking up the pieces after another loss. Hopefully it was a little therapeutic for you, and hopefully you enjoyed it. And we will talk to you again soon.